So coming up next, we have a veteran storyteller at this point, a good friend of mine. He gave me the coolest birthday gift last week. He's a local comics artist, and I told him that I liked Bruce Springsteen and the Transformers, and he drew me his version of the cover to Transformers number 14, where the Autobots saved Bruce Springsteen from the Decepticons. That is a true thing that happened in 1986, courtesy of Marvel Comics. It's a great picture. It's on my Facebook right now. Kevin Budnick.
Yeah! Guys, you should look up that drawing, not because I did it and because it's like, not that it's a good drawing, but just you should watch, see the original one, like the drawing of, I don't even know what Transformer is that.
Hoist.
Okay, and he's like, and Bruce Springsteen is like, no, and Hoist is saving him from this like falling scaffolding. It's really funny. Anyway, so I'm just going to start. I have some stuff I need to say. I don't think there's a resolution at the end of the story, but I'm just going to go into it. This story starts out at the cafe I work at about 6 months ago. I was in the dish pit in the back of the kitchen, up to my elbows in half-eaten quiche and wet bread. It smells in the dish pit. It's hot, it's humid, it's wet, and it's gross. So I'm sweaty, with basil pesto in my hair and on my shirt, when the manager calls me up front. She needs my help untangling the laptop, the anti-theft cord, laptop anti-theft cord for a patron. I dry my hands on a filthy dish rag, look up, and I step out. The customer looks up and meets my eyes, and in a Johnny Unitas haircutted Brooks Brothers button-down bro voice, I hear, "Holy shit, Kevin Budnick, how the hell are you?" Jimmy Murphy and I went to high school together. I was the Rogers Park kid tag-along to Jimmy's Kenilworth-born friend group. See, we city kids were a commodity. We were dangerous. We grew up on the mean streets of Park Ridge and Sauganash. We stole lawn gnomes. So I got to ride along with privileged kids when we went to Gilson Beach to hang out, or up to Glencoe to buy Slurpees. But after high school, our paths diverged. Jimmy went on to work for Merrill Lynch, and he gets so drunk with his bros that he can't make it up to Evanston to audit a bank. So he decides to work at the Bourgeois Fucking Pig, and what are you up to, Budnick? I heard you're doing comic shit. Fucking A. And as I fiddle with his anti-theft laptop cord, dripping in the leftovers of Linkin Park brunchers, I think, yeah, Jimmy, fucking A. Fucking A is right. Because I'm standing on this side of the counter, because I chose to pursue my dream after high school, and I like going home smelling like espresso and fried meat. It makes me feel like I earned my solid hour of drawing every day. So yeah, fucking A, here's your laptop cords. Good to see you. Now, I could stop there, but I won't, because the last time I heard from Jimmy wasn't that day. It was just about a week ago, and I'll tell you more about that later. Last week, I had one of the worst days at work I've had in a while. It rained in the morning, so I didn't get to ride my bike. Right away, that's a bummer. I'm a person who needs constant physical inertia. I can't sit, so riding the train, especially in the rain, especially like to Linkin Park, is depressing. I get to work, and I'm agitated. I make the schedule for the following week, and we don't have enough hands on deck, so I'll have to work over 40 hours. And my car, which I hate in the first place, is dead. And my folks don't think it's a good idea for me to borrow theirs to go to my friend's wedding this weekend, so I have to scramble. And some lady from the hospital I was born at calls to yell at me about how our salads are bad, and bad, and not fresh, and bad, and just make it not bad. By 2:30, I was fuming. 2:30 is when we shift change our baristas, and Mercedes comes in to take over. She's one of our best employees, and she's always a delight to see, because I know that when I leave, everything's going to be fine. That's when Mercedes' mom comes in. She approached the register and asks quietly in a muted voice, "Are you Kevin?" And I say, "Yes." She says, "I'm Alma, Mercedes' mom, and there's been a death in the family." Immediately, all my self-righteous anger, all the indignance over salads and bikes and scheduling is gone. And the sight of Mercedes curled up in a ball in the iron patio chair where her mom has solemnly ushered her to tell her that her uncle had just committed suicide. That's never going to leave my mind. Because it made me realize that maybe my problems, my bullshit, it's just that. It's bullshit. Last time I talked to Jimmy, coming back to that, was last week. I got a text that said, "Did you hear about Ronan?" Some of you guys might have known Dan Ronan. He was a rising star in the comedy scene. I went to high school with him. He was part of that group of guys who went around pegging beers and drinking them in basements and on beaches with ping pong tables and electronic basketball hoops. I didn't keep in close contact with him, but I heard that he was doing really well. I heard that he was following his dream. So all that bile towards Jimmy, when he texted me, it melted a little bit. No matter how diametrically opposite our lives are, Jimmy and I can't run from having shared a time in our lives. You can put a counter between us, you can put bits of hummus on my pants, and you can put a yacht party hangover on him, but we're both people who are fallible, who get mad, and who have demons. Thanks.